good chance to move closer to the fifth round of the FA Cup. It's Reid. Oh, he's done it! Set-piece sorcery from Lewis Reid. And as it stands, the League One team are heading for the fifth round of the FA Cup. Oh, it's sublime. So well struck, to unbridled delight.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Ian Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
After a later than usual FA Cup fourth round weekend, yes, it was Valentine's Day this weekend, but it was also FA Cup fourth round day. And traditionally, FA Cup fourth round is end of January, so it's a couple of weeks later than it usually is, but they've messed around with the fixtures so much of late. They've only just brought back the weekend fifth round, haven't they, Terry? So we've just got to get used to the messing about with the schedule there for the FA Cup. There's no replays anymore, is it? So it doesn't really matter if it's a bit late nowadays, is it?
Well, all I can really do whenever we think about the FA Cup is I just go, because of the way that they keep changing it every year. It's every 3 year cycle, isn't it? It's usually to coincide with the television deals, whatever the television deal is. The FA Cup still remains the most important competition in English football because it directly funds grassroots.
Yes.
And so therefore we don't have a game without the grassroots. So it's a significant funder of grassroots and non-league football, without which the entire football pyramid collapses. So it's hugely important, and it annoys me that people don't see it like that, because really, actually, if you were really looking for the long-term sustainability, and indeed, if you go that way, growth of the game, you absolutely must ensure that the foundations of the pyramid is properly funded, and the FA Cup plays a big role in doing that. And so you would actually make it the most important set of fixtures and hang your fixtures around the FA Cup. That's how it should actually be done. But that's not how it's done. It's done more like an afterthought, at the whim of TNT Sports. And that's just a terrible, terrible idea. Doing anything because TNT Sports wants you to do it is a recipe for catastrophe, guys. Utter catastrophe.
Well, as much as anything, though, it does mean that a lot of clubs could say, yes, we were in the FA Cup still in the middle of February. Now, obviously, Palace can't, obviously, but teams like Burnley could, couldn't they, Jan? And, all right, that's it. That's the end of the road for them. And Sunderland, look, they're still in it. They're going to be in the FA Cup in March. March, for goodness sake. Who are you hoping to get out of the old bag when they make the draw later on?
I don't want to get Macclesfield. If assuming they make it through, it's tonight they're playing, isn't it?
Because if you get Macclesfield, you'll actually get Brentford, and Brentford are really, really good at the moment, aren't they?
Yeah, I don't want to get Brentford either. Yeah, they are very good and tore us apart a few weeks ago. But yes, Sunderland are in the last 16, and I've got red hot cup fever. I'm very, very excited by it. I watched the Oxford game with an Oxford person yesterday. I couldn't understand a word he said. It was something about cheese rolling. I don't know. But I did very much enjoy the game. It was Oxford, even though they're in the relegation places in the Championship and haven't really had a meaningful result in a little while, put on a really good show. Although Sunderland's strength did come through ultimately, and they were playing a near full strength side as well. So they're seriously going for it this season. They really went toe-to-toe with us for a long time, but ultimately we won out. And it could have been more than just the 1-0 score, but Oxford have got a keeper called Ingram, who was unbelievable. Mm. He really, really was good. I think he spared some blushes, which wouldn't have been fair, to be honest with you, because I thought Oxford played really, really well. It was a good game to watch.
I think Sunderland, given the way that they've been playing this season, they could easily concentrate on the FA Cup because there is no danger of them going down because there are significantly more crap teams in the Premier League. There is no reason for them not to do a Palace. Last season's Palace, not this season's Palace.
Yeah, yes, just to be clear.
Just to be clear, yeah. Yeah, that's right, isn't it, Terry? I mean, like, the vibes are there for Sunderland to go all in on the FA Cup, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I can understand Jan maybe being a little bit reticent to say such things because, you know, he is very much, you know, stuck to the narrative that, oh, you know, we could be relegated any second now, lads. From the day after they were promoted, like, oh no, we're going straight back down. And even now, we're still remembering, oh, it's close now. But no, I think for the rest of us who perhaps aren't quite so close to Sunderland, you look at that objectively and think, well, if Palace can win the FA Cup, then why can't my team? I like the way Jan, when you were asking Jan about it, and like it all felt like this was Sunderland from like about 5 years ago when they were a League One club. Yeah. Well, who are you going to get in the next round, Jan? I just hope we get a home tie against a big club. You know, it's just like, I mean, hang on, I know you are the big club now. So, it's just, I mean, I think that attitude, that whole thing is commendable. All I would say is if Sunderland do win it, I hope they don't make a complete pig's breakfast of the season after that Crystal Palace have done. Because I feel a lot of Palace's problems come from the fact that they won the FA Cup, believe it or not. And the club's inability to manage that success.
Obviously didn't help with the nonsense at the beginning of the season, not knowing which European competition you were in. And I know some people say, well, you know you're going to be playing on Thursdays, but no, there's playing on Thursdays and there's playing on Thursdays. And obviously there is friction between Glasner and the ownership, and anything that doesn't give you an easy pre-season is going to be problematic. And this is really for the second season in a row this has happened, when preparations for the season haven't been ideal. It's not winning the FA Cup's fault. It's just maybe that they're just not set up to win the FA Cup.
No, that's right. The issue isn't so much, yes, you're right, it's not the FA Cup's fault that Palace have been rubbish this season, but they have been rubbish as a consequence of their inability to manage the club in the wake of winning the FA Cup. New standards being set, and obviously the extra round of fixtures, the fact that we were in the Conference League, it's a fact because a lot of the clubs, we've been into this.
Yeah.
But I think it's established that it was the club's kind of fault for why we're not playing in the Europa League. That and Nottingham Forest's as well, of course, because they are snitches. If there's a lesson to be learnt here, I think for any middle-class clubs who win the FA Cup, is just to look at what happened to Palace in the summer and maybe don't do what they did. Maybe be a little bit more together and a little bit better organised. Because otherwise, yeah, you could end up having quite a difficult season and be quite anticlimactic. And it has been an anticlimactic season. There's no getting around. It's been a bitterly disappointing season, especially since it actually started off relatively well, what with winning the Community Shield. In the future, of course, this will mean nothing. You know, as this season disappears off in the rearview mirror, what we will have will be the memories of winning the FA Cup and the Community Shield, and the kind of chaos that's come afterwards will be less of an issue. But in this moment, it's unpleasant. It's been an unpleasant season.
Well, obviously you didn't have an unpleasant weekend because Palace didn't play. So that was a weight off your mind, I'm sure.
No, we just had an unpleasant Wednesday instead.
Well, yes. But, of course, the football gods give, the football gods take away, don't they? And Burnley thought that they might have turned a corner by beating Palace. I don't know how you would think that at the moment, but they must have thought that things were looking better for them. Jam a win away to Palace and then think, oh, well, we've only got Mansfield in the FA Cup. But didn't really work out that way for them, did it, Jan?
No, it didn't. They took the lead and probably thought, well, here we go again. It's just, there literally is jam tomorrow. Tomorrow being today. Anyway, yes, they were 1-0 up after 20 minutes and then 2 second-half goals. And then they were out of the cup, which is nothing more than they deserve. Because not only did they jam a result against Palace, they also jammed a result against us earlier in the season as well.
Can I just offer a bit of Burnley analysis that no one has asked for?
Please do.
For those who are genuinely interested in the way Burnley play football, qualified by the fact that Palace couldn't play their way through a paper bag at the moment. But that second half, where Burnley defended that one goal lead, showed you what Burnley are actually quite good at doing, and that is playing with a really, really low block. And if they could find a way of taking the lead more often, then they may well have had a chance in this league, because they actually played pretty well once they had something to defend. It won't be like that against all teams, but it might have been like that against enough teams for them to get some points. And I think that really illustrated the challenge that newly promoted sides have got, and really why the way Sunderland went about this season is the better way, because they have been a lot more diverse in the way they play football, and they have emphasised scoring the goals, because you got to score the goals in order to win the football matches. But Burnley, I think, have managed to convince themselves that they can kind of maybe 1-0 their way through this division. And then we saw why in that second half against that game. For the few people that watched that game, we could see why. Everybody else was watching something more fun on the other channels. Yeah, so cautionary tale again for newly promoted sides to sign some strikers, guys.
Yes, you know, goals do come in handy. They really do.
Yeah, and like Zian Fleming is great if you sort of like want to write knock-off James Bond novels, you know. but not too good for scoring the old goals.
No.
Gotta say it.
Yeah.
The contrast between their two seasons last year, when they came up with that amazing defensive record, I think it was like 16 goals.
Yeah.
As it stands, in the league alone, they've conceded 51.
Yeah.
So we've got to look at how they've addressed and how they've prepared for this season. So to be where they are now compared to how well they finished last season is just night and day. There's plenty of dross around them. They could have done something. You know, Leeds have done something. They're not massively clear of danger, but it feels like they're going to be okay, Leeds. And though I still, as Terry quite rightly pointed out, still think Sunderland not out of the woods. But those two sides have done great, and Burnley have just, it's like they haven't really gone for it at all. And that's not the players' fault. You know, they did their job last year, and they've come up and just haven't been reinforced enough. And that's down to the club. It's down to planning. Not really down to Scott Parker either. He's been given what he's given, and he hasn't been able to turn a team that did well in the Championship into a team that's going to do well in the Premier League, because he hasn't been given the resources. So.
Yeah, well, he'll always be in demand for teams in the Championship because he never fails to get a team promoted. But that is, of course, unless Bayern come calling in the summer, which, you know, is we obviously cannot count that out, can we?
Company could go to City, couldn't he?
Well,
when Pep moves on, you see, it could happen.
There is actually a title race on now in Germany, isn't there, Terry?
After a fashion, yeah, I'd say so.
After fashion,
yeah.
Yeah. This is you getting all Yanny now, isn't it? Now,
yeah, I think it's as close we've got to a title race since the big one a few years ago. But yeah, it did look like Bayern were running away with it, didn't it? But no, they've kind of been pegged back a little bit. There's a couple of important fixtures coming up for Dortmund, thinking one of which is against Bayern, and yeah, the picture could look different if things go Dortmund's way in the next couple of weeks.
Did I see that Harry Kane got his 500th career goal at the weekend?
Mm, you did. You did.
That is incredible. He's done all right out there, isn't he?
I don't follow the Bundesliga as closely as I have done in recent years. But nevertheless, I do keep across the opinions of people who do follow it very closely. And there seems to be a view that this isn't just like Harry Kane sort of like making hay in a farmer's league. There is a view that Harry Kane is as fit as he's been in years. And is playing just absolutely, they are playing the kind of football that Key wants to play. I think it bodes very well for England, because if Bayern were to overcome the current trials and to win the Bundesliga at a canter, and even if they were to get to the final of the Champions League, you know, they're not going to be rinsing Harry Kane out to the extent that it would do if he was playing at a Premier League club going for the title, for example. I think then if you look ahead to June and the World Cup, we could be going into a World Cup where we actually have a fit and relatively fresh Harry Kane. And that is, I would say, something for England fans to be encouraged about.
Well, I've got the news ticker up in the background here, so the draw is due any moment now. Regular listeners will know that we record this early on a Monday evening, so the final game of the FA Cup weekend hasn't been played yet. Obviously, we've glossed over a lot of the results. The familiar names who are left in the competition all pretty much breezed through their games. So hopefully they'll all be drawn against each other just to make the last few rounds extra spicy. There was one game in there, though, that I thought was very interesting when we think about what we were talking about last week about VAR and about how we think that, you know, how VAR has overreached and has spoiled things. And those who love VAR are struggling to work out why it makes the game less exciting when it actually makes it more accurate. None of the games in the fourth round had VAR, and one of the games was packed with errors. And match-changing errors, you would have thought, had the side that was penalised for these errors not gone on to win comfortably in the end. It was Newcastle versus Aston Villa. The game ended 3-1. It was a comfortable win for Newcastle. But Jan, Villa got away with a hell of a lot, didn't they? Which they wouldn't have done if VAR had been in play.
Yes, I think because there was no VAR, this was a wonderful game because it was a proper cup tie. It was full of chaos. It was full of controversy. And both teams really wanted it. But yeah, just to point out some of the things that possibly would have been caught had VAR been there to spoil it. Tammy Abraham's opening goal was, I think, offside. I think most people who saw it would probably think it was offside. And Digne fouled Murphy, which he did get a yellow card for, but his studs were up, so maybe that would have been caught. And then there was Trippier tried to cross the ball in, I think it was the second half, from the right corner of the box. Digne again involved with his arms quite high, and the ball hit his arms, and the referee penalised him for it, but didn't give the penalty, which is where the offence happened, inside the penalty area, gave a free kick outside of the box, which I just loved. I thought it was great. It's unfortunate, but, you know, across the game, Newcastle did all right out of it. They still won 3-1. They still deserved it. Tonali's second goal was an absolute belter, and the referee did get probably the biggest decision of the night correct when Bizzard, the keeper for Villa, raced so far out of his area, he was near the centre circle where he took out Murphy. Murphy got a battering in this game. So he was sent, quite literally, he was airborne by that, and Bizzard got sent off. So all in all, a cracking game. Yes, there were some errors in it, but there are errors in every other competition that are played on these islands, with the exception of the Premier League, and there's still errors then. But, you know, this is football that's enjoyed by everybody else that doesn't watch the Premier League or doesn't play in the Premier League. And this proves the rule that we always said, don't we, over the course of a season, the best team tends to win and the worst team tends to go down. Over the course of a game, this was true. So I don't really think it changed the outcome. Maybe Newcastle might have a few more goals. But, you know, I thought it was a cracking game and, you know, shit happens.
Yeah, Terry, we said last week that the benchmark should be a lot higher for VAR to get involved. I think in the one incident that it should have got involved with, if the referee hadn't called it right, was the red card, and he got it right. I've read a lot of things about people saying, oh, this game would have been so different with VAR. It's a great advert for why VAR is a good thing. And I thought completely the opposite. I thought, yeah, if you love VAR, you'll have wanted it. But if you hate VAR, you would have probably just still loved this game anyway.
A lot of it is because the referees put themselves in a position where they were making, you know, subjective decisions about what they think is and wasn't an infringement. If I was a Newcastle fan, I'd probably look at that Digne handball and say, well, that was a penalty. I mean, I look at that and go, if that would be my club, I'd have wanted a penalty.
Yeah.
In the smell of the game, if you were to consider the smell of the game, you would look at that. You'd think that actually, you know, it's an accidental handball, or it's kind of like a, you know, the ball is coming to him at close range at pace, and it doesn't feel like a natural sort of like proper handball.
Yeah.
But I feel that for me, that's a handball and a penalty.
I think nowadays it is. 10 years ago, I don't think that would have been.
I completely agree with that. No,
I don't think that would have been
considered. Yeah. No, that would have been considered to be an accidental handball and not a handball and not been given as a penalty.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's the right result for Newcastle, so it's not that much of an issue. But the only thing you could then say about that, that's still not a justification for VAR, because really that's just a justification for the referee maybe not interpreting the rules as well as he should have done, or just using his eyes better. That's really an argument for more confident refereeing. And like, I know this is something that Alan Shearer said, wasn't it, after the game, that he felt that VAR is eroding the confidence of Premier League referees because they know VAR, or they feel that VAR is there to back them up apart from when it isn't. I don't know whether that's true, because I'm sure actually Premier League referees do referee non-VAR games. But I mean, I'm comfortable with the narrative because it fits in with my own sort of like way of looking at things. But I'm not certain that it's quite that way.
I think that's an easy assumption to make. It makes the referees sound lazy. It also makes referees sound like they've checked out of being referees. And I don't think that's the case. I think that's actually quite a dangerous opinion to have. Anyway, VAR did not spoil that game, and neither did poor refereeing, because Newcastle still won. And their reward, as it's just coming up on my screen now, is a home tie against Man City in the fifth round. I've seen some of the other fixtures, but that's already tie of the round, isn't it, Jan?
I think so. Well, no, I don't think so. I don't think so, because I did see your face, Graham, because I pulled a similar face when I saw that Mansfield Town have drawn Arsenal at home.
Yes.
That is the tie of the round. I think that's going to be that's what the FA Cup's all about at time.
Do you think so?
And Sunderland are away to Port Vale or Bristol City. A trip to Ashton Gate is not going to be easy, is it, for you? But,
No, that's a tough one. But, you know, if you want to go all the way, you've got to beat some tough sides.
Yeah, yes. What else have we got here? Chelsea away to Wrexham. Oh, God. That's going to be an awful game.
That's going to be one of the most obnoxious games of football on the... Oh!
Oh, yeah.
Awfulness meets showbiz.
Oh, God. So we've got the Petro State Derby, and we've got awfulness at Welcome to Wrexham. Oh, yeah. No, actually, that doesn't sound like a bad draw to me. We're going to see some interesting teams in the quarterfinals who haven't been in the quarterfinals for a while. I think Leeds Norwich is going to be a good one. I wrote in the box set they've not been in the quarterfinal for something ridiculous, like about 20-odd years or so. I think they've got a good chance to get through there. So all to look forward to in the fifth round there. Well, that's enough of the FA Cup anyway. FA Cup's fun, but we'll put that in a box and wait for a couple more weeks because we'll get excited about it and start talking about it again. I went on a little football trip this week. I went to Brussels, went to Leuven specifically, but I'd gotten the Eurostar to Brussels just for a 24-hour thing. Went out on Wednesday morning, watched the Women's Champions League, Arsenal beating Leuven quite comfortably in their first leg, and then came back the following day. And in that space of time, two Premier League managers got sacked. They did it on purpose, didn't they? They just waited till I was out of the country, and then P45s were just flying around, weren't they, Terry?
Yeah, absolutely. It was definitely a day of drama, or a night of drama, certainly in the case of one of them, because was it the announcement that Sean Dyche had been fired by Nottingham Forest came out, I think, something like 12:45 in the morning? So that was after the 0-0 draw with Wolves, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And Evangelos Marianakis doing presumably the old empty chair routine at some point. And there must have been a conversation with Sean. And yeah, then that was that. Fired a Rooney. Done. Out. Gone. After, I don't know, 5 minutes. To be replaced by Vitor Pereira, who clearly is now positioning himself as the Red Adair type for ailing Premier League football clubs. And he's coming in to give his intense Portuguese stare and do what he did with Wolves. And of course, Thomas Frank. Much anticipated demise of Thomas Frank, the Spurs coach, who really had no business coaching that team, to be perfectly honest with you. And finally, Spurs have come to the same conclusion, and he's gone. To be replaced by Igor Tudor.
Yes.
Another Red Adair type.
Yeah. Yeah. Igor Tudor, never been at a club more than 18 months, I think, his record. But he comes in, does a job of sorts, and then goes. odd timing was it, Jan, do you think? Or does it? Do you get a manager in a couple of weeks after the transfer window closes because you don't want to buy any more new players? Is that what you're doing? If you bring in a manager in the middle of January, then they're going to say, oh, yeah, yeah, right, how much money are you going to give me? So at least when you do it this way around, they go, oh, no, sorry, transfer windows. If it was up to me, I would. I'd be throwing money at you, but my hands are tied.
I mean, Forest, man.
Put it this way, Forest have sacked their third permanent manager this season.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not even Watford have sacked three managers in a season.
Not even Watford.
Not well, even Watford.
Watford. That club is... They're now outspursing Spurs. These are times to be alive, lads. They really are. You could always see it coming. You could always see it coming from when Sean Dyche was first announced. You're like, well, I don't know how long you're going to be here, mate. Wouldn't get your initials put on your training jacket because you know, you're going to be giving that over to somebody else soon enough, aren't you? You know, I wouldn't say they had the world at their feet at the start of the season, but they certainly were expected to crack on, weren't they? They just missed out on the Champions League and they were in Europe. And it was all going, should be going okay under Nuno, but we saw the kind of fractures start to show themselves, didn't we, the end of last season when Marinakis was arguing with him on the pitch and then they brought in Ange. He was a complete opposite manager. So he'd gone from a quite a defensive catch him on the break manager to go to Ange, who was just mad Ange ball, and then brought in Dyche, who was a similar sort of coach to Nuno. So you can kind of see there's no real strategy going on here, I would argue. I mean, I've never run a football club myself. But I would hazard that I could probably do a better job than Marinakis. It's quite sad to see because Forrest always got a place in my heart because of Brian Clough. And the guy was, you know, he's really high in my football value system, you might say. And just to see them, you know, former European Cup winners, back-to-back European Cup winners with you know, some great players that played for them across the years, to see them being... You know, really just destroyed by a person who does not really understand what he's doing or has no strategy at best to be running a club of that history and pedigree. It's really quite sad, actually.
Terry, what did you think of the news of them going? Entirely predictable, or do you think Frank might make it to the end of the season? He's made it this far.
But when I found out about Dyche, I laughed.
Yeah.
Because I laugh at Forrest's misfortune. Just to correct the ever so slightly from my colleague's analysis. I mean, they finishing in a Conference League spot, of course.
Yes.
And I think half the problem also with Marinakis is that he doesn't fully own the club, of course, because his shares were in a blind trust, of course, as we know.
Of course.
Yeah, otherwise they wouldn't be allowed to play in the Europa League, would they? Which they are playing in. So, you know, you can imagine the chaos there. I mean, it's just, you know, you can well imagine. You know, and they grassed up Palace and complained about them about the Europa League thing. And now they appear to be in some difficulty. I'm not suggesting one thing follows another, but, you know, there you go. That's Forest for you. I wish them, as I've said before, I wish them interesting times and for eternity. In fact, you know what? I know I'm not quite up to the standard of Bella Gutman, but I think that a curse is in the offing. What I'll do is I'll come up with the wording for my Forest curse. 100 years out of the Premier League? What do you think? 50 years? Is that realistic? Mm. 50 years out of the Premier League?
Yeah.
I'll finesse that later. Yeah. Thomas Frank, I like Thomas Frank. I like the cut of his jib. I think he's a good coach. I think he was brilliant at Brentford, but he was very much at the top of a very, very firm and solid pyramid at Brentford. And I think that what's happened is this another dopey Daniel Levy hire who's gone, oh, Brentford are good, let's sign their manager. Without really realising that there's a whole infrastructure behind that club, of which Thomas Frank has done an excellent job being the focal point at the very, very top. But it is not the same thing. And I think really they needed to sort of like buy Brentford and then just like move it into the new stadium is really what they should have done, which of course they can't do. Even though Brentford's not an actual place, as we've discussed on this podcast before. I just think that it was a bad hire for Spurs, and it's a shame. I kind of hope there's one possible scenario whereby if Palace can rally themselves and stay in the Premier League this season, that Thomas Frank would probably be a good fit for Palace. Although there's a lot of chaos about Palace, and they're not a particularly well-run club. It's just that the playing style, I think, kind of works. The other problem with Frank is he doesn't fit the tactical profile of the players, in my opinion. And that's because there's no coach that fits the tactical profile of that Spurs squad, because their recruitment has been a complete mess. Palace is a little bit less messy, and I think that Frank would probably work with that squad of players. But still, it's not a straightforward one. But Thomas Frank will be back in football in no time, I would suggest to you. But I do feel bad for him. And, you know, I mean, I would wish, but I don't know where Spurs turn. Obviously, Igor Tudor is, I think he's got a reputation for being a taskmaster. He certainly did when he was at Marseille. But I think he's being recruited because of the work that he did at Juventus and Lazio, where he kind of turned their seasons around, kept them in a holding pattern while the club then made longer term coaching decisions. So I assume that that's the play here.
All of those clubs that you mentioned are absolute bin fires as well. So if he's used to that, he'll do all right there at Tottenham. He'll do all right. That doesn't mean, he's going to do all right there. No. That's he's going to do okay there.
Yeah, well, both of those new guys at Forest and at Spurs, they're only there till the end of the season. They are just there to put out the bin fire. No, I apologise. I'm wrong. He got an 18-month contract, didn't he? So he is there for a little bit longer. Yeah, my apologies. My
well,
bad. Yeah.
But that contract is also signed by Marinakis. So.
He's got to be odds on to be the next manager to be sacked, hasn't he? Surely.
You would imagine so. More interesting time ahead. And, of course, both of those sides are still just above the relegation zone. In fact, if you look at the form table for the last 20 games, Tottenham are in the relegation zone. So West Ham are putting results together. They're not spectacularly climbing the table, but they are chasing Forest down. They're only 3 points behind Forest now. So, yeah, I think interesting times ahead if those guys do not land running. And with Tottenham, they've still got that injury crisis there. It's going to be a nightmare for them. But I think Forest just aren't getting out of this. There's no escape for them. They're going down.
They're cursed, Graham.
They're cursed. Once you refine your curse, Terry, that's it. That's it. They've got no chance. But, of course, we've got a weekend of football coming up as well. So what are you going to be watching this weekend, I wonder? Well, I'll be watching the North London Derby. Thankfully, Jan, you'll be writing about it, because you always write the Tottenham previews, and you'll be writing about a new Tottenham manager as well. So great timing for him, isn't it? Coming into the job and having the North London Derby. Free hit for him, is it?
Well, no. No, because it's the North London Derby, as you correctly pointed out. It's going to be tough. But the fact that they've got a new manager incoming, I think, adds a little bit more spice to an already spicy affair. Looking forward to covering that one.
Yeah, and Terry, the resurgent Dortmund, flying Dortmund, goal-scoring Dortmund, have got a tricky trip to Leipzig, haven't they, on the Saturday evening game.
Yeah, indeed. Such is the clamour for some kind of title race that Dortmund beating Mainz 4-0 is a resurgence. But that's obviously a massive game, especially with Der Klassiker. I can't be asked to fight that expression anymore, is coming up next week. It's part one of a thrilling two-part episode that could shape the destination of the Bundesliga title a little bit this season. So much to get excited about. I'm also quite excited about doing Blackburn versus Preston as well. Michael O'Neill back in club football, while at the same time doing his Northern Ireland thing as well. So fun times there at the Rovers.
Yes, lovely Lancashire derby there. Other things going on this weekend, it's the return of MLS. If you have Apple TV, you don't need your season pass anymore. You can watch MLS on a Saturday night and ridiculous times in the morning as well. But there are some on Saturday evening that you can start watching. So the season starts this weekend. But also, if you're in the UK, BBC have just signed a new deal to the end of the season. Well, BBC Alba, the Scottish language channel, will be showing 8 Serie A games between now and the end of the season, mainly because there's a lot of Scottish internationals playing in Serie A at the moment, and so they've picked up a few choice ties. That's a bit of a coup, isn't it, Terry?
Yeah, I mean, it's a nice move. I mean, they can do it because international rights for Serie A are basically so cheap at the moment that almost anyone can. I mean, we could set up a streaming channel on YouTube and buy the rights for Serie A, to be perfectly honest with you. Yeah. I'm not suggesting that we do, but we could.
Yeah.
And so it's great that BBC Alba have looked at that and gone, oh, look, let's reach it. So they've gone for the fixtures that, yeah, for clubs that have their Scottish internationals. And apparently they brought back the old Gazzetta Football Italia theme tune from Channel 4, which is a nice touch.
Yeah.
Shows that they care and they're putting a little bit into it. Well, what a world that we live in, guys, you know. Like, I mean, could it be that Italy wins the World Cup for Scotland? How wild would that be? How wild would that be?
Well, if you want to see what we think of all those games that are going to be in our box set this weekend, then get along to sofpodcast.com and click on the link for the weekend box set. And subscribe to our Substack. And it will be in your inbox on Friday. Lunchtime-ish. Ish. I say ish because Jan doesn't bother getting his in till about 11 o'clock, even though I said Thursday's a hard deadline.
Massive shade.
Yeah, massive shade.
Is that true, Yanis? You're not getting. You're not turning yours in until.
I was. I wrote. Yes, it's true.
Well, there you go, listeners.
I get mine in on Thursday evening because I'm a girly swot.
Girly swot.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, he does. It's a gold star. That's why he's got so many gold stars there. You see that? For the recording purposes, that's all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry DeVillain, it's goodbye.
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 Get in touch with us on Blue Sky or Instagram, where we are at Sound of Football, or go to sofpodcast.com. Like us, share us, rate us and review us. Do it now!
See, we couldn't have done that last bit if we'd just been talking about Ratcliffe, could we?
No,
we could not.
I'm off for a nice, agreeable chili, you know?
Oh, I've got some leftover beef from yesterday, so...
Not nice.
You've got some leftover beef. I was going to say, surely that's what the podcast is for, to get rid of residual beef. Because I have no beef left, because obviously after my Forest rant, I have no beef. All my beef is... I'll wait till next week.